also a member of the Climate Emergency Network, among other things. A small piece of information that the wind industry is having similar problems. There's a company called Keppel Prince in Portland that puts up, I think, about 40% of Australia's wind turbines. They're also facing laying off 150 employees. They've got wind turbines sitting in the yard, apparently, but they don't have the money, the investment there to actually put them up. The wind farms are approved and everything, but the investment money isn't there. And all the government's renewable energy certificates, which might help these wind farms go up, are all going to good things like solar hot water heaters and solar panels on roofs, but they're giving bonus extras to all those people and stealing at the same time from the big scale wind farms like was in Mark's presentation. So there's another way in which this government is destroying the renewables industry, unfortunately. I just want to ask a quick question. I wasn't clear of Clive's comments about the emissions trading, that whether you were saying you support a better version of the emissions trading system with all the adjectives of the very surprising things coming from Tony Abbott, that they won't use carbon taxes and emissions trading and they're going back to good old, well, Stalinist measures, or I think that rather than using, I know it supports Stalinism, but public ownership and accountable planning are very important for this, to make these sorts of transitions in this short time frame. And I wasn't clear what you were advocating on that, if you could explain.
I'll take a couple more, that's off the back. Well, there's two people off the back.
Yeah, I think the most important question that's been raised from the front is how do we get the required political will to make the change? And I think the reason we don't have the political will is essentially because business and the politicians who back them see cheap electricity from coal as an international competitive advantage. Carbon's built into everything in the modern economy, and it's a brutally competitive economy. And I think in order to get the required will, we will need to build a mass movement. You know, there's over 100 of us in the room tonight. I think we need meetings like this of 1,000 people. We need protests. That means all of us going out and speaking to our friends, our families, our classmates, our workmates. But above all, I think it means winning the unions. To get to a point where unions will refuse to build new power stations unless they are renewable. Unions have taken action like this in the past around green bans. The Australian Council of Trade Unions is starting to get it. Sharon Burrow talks about creating 1 million climate jobs. Now, I mean, that figure's not an exaggeration. When business talks about cost, what they mean is they're going to have to pay people to do the work. And actually, if you were serious about doing the work, nobody need be unemployed. Unfortunately, however, rather than calling on the government to just do what needs to be done, which is build renewable energy, which is electrify transport and have public transport, they're backing the carbon pollution reduction scheme. And I guess the one thing I disagree with Clive is I don't think you can make cuts, emission cuts at the scale we need with price signals, whether that's carbon taxes or carbon trading, unless you're prepared to cut the majority of people off electricity. I actually think you do need planning. I don't think it's Stalinist. I think what Tony Abbott is talking about is just doing nothing. But, for instance, government built all the coal-fired infrastructure in this country. Why can't we get government to build all the renewable infrastructure that we so desperately need? When they really want to do something, they don't come up with trading schemes like the new $36 billion they're spending for submarines. They just go and do it. And I think that's what we need to do. I also think we need to take the carbon pollution reduction scheme head on. It's not going to work, and we have to start saying that.
I would like to actually criticize you also over some of the sentiments that you made. I don't think actually democracy, the way it's actually run at the moment, is going to solve the problem without protests, without getting people involved onto the streets. I actually work at Ceres, at the Ceres Cafe, so I actually have a lot to do with the general public, speaking to our customers that come in, and then, like, you know, they see pamphlets, they see what we're doing, and they keep asking us questions. So there's quite a lot of interest involved, and like democracy at the moment is only working through lobby groups. And so just relying on that and saying like a protest is not going to solve anything is kind of like making the whole thing wishy-washy. So we really need to step up, and also we need to step up in the words we use and actually call things by name. And like, yes, if we are serious about climate change and changing it, there's going to be job losses. We have to shut down the mining sector. And we need to start calling it exactly by that. And I think this is what we really need to step up to and say, like, look, guys, this is what's going to happen. But if we don't do climate change, we're going to not just have more job losses than if we actually change it, but also we're going to lose lives and millions of them, because people will lose the properties that they have. And I think this is really what we need to step up with, is make it, like, you know, more, make a stronger point.
Okay, I'll have the panel to comment now.
Clarification. Just on the Starlers, I was using the word that the economic rationalists and the RKA used to use about regulation, or the term they most commonly used was command and control, which had these sort of Starlers connotations. But regulation is a perfectly legitimate and effective way of achieving environmental goals, and I'm strongly in favour of a whole range of forms of regulation. Energy efficiency standards, for example, fuel economy standards, and on the other hand, providing subsidies for renewable energy industries. I'm strongly in favour of those, and the Greens' Safe Climate Package of 12 bills is chock full of those sorts of regulations to augment, supplement, add to a strong emission trading system, which would be at its core. So I'm not opposed to that in the least. What I was trying to do is to say that Tony Abbott's ideological progenitors were radically opposed to those sorts of measures, whereas I never have been. And please don't get me wrong, I mean, the democratic process that we currently have is deeply flawed as a result of money, politics and the power of lobbyists, as we've heard tonight. And the response to it is clearly a mass response, a mass movement, to go out on the streets and demand that governments change. And one of the tremendous lessons from the moratorium movement was the way in which very, very disparate groups combined with a single objective. In the moratorium movement, you had peace groups, you had women's groups, you had church groups, you had trade unions, which all came together in a highly effective way over several years, got people out on the streets in huge numbers and brought about a radical change. And that is really the only way we can do it. So it's not a question of abandoning the democratic process, it's a question of recapturing it so that it does express the people's will.
I think one of the things that members don't want to say is that there is a necessary role for the state in the transition to a clean economy. If the financial authorities were to say that 1% of all new superannuation funds would be on the sort of project that we're here talking about tonight, we'd get more funding in renewable energy than CPRS has been producing 20 years. I just think that that sort of approach is the most direct and most efficient. The other thing we've got to recognise is that we are talking about a new industry, a new way of producing energy, which needs scaling up and which needs innovation. For anybody who knows their history in the scaling up and innovation of new technologies, it is almost inevitably always driven by the state. I mean, the two greatest outpourings of new ideas and innovation were one, the Second World War. Bad purpose, but the technological revolution came out that was astounding. And the second was the Apollo program, where non-military research and development in the United States was quadrupled in 5 years and produced a lot of the technologies that we have now. For example, when the microchip first came out, they were $10,000 each, and the American state, the American military, decided it was actually a very useful thing for them. And in order to get the price down, the Pentagon actually guaranteed to buy all chips at a specified price for 5 years in order to produce the scaling up and the innovation necessary to make that industry available. And the consequence of that Pentagon decision was that the cost of chips went from $10,000 to $10. So over and over again, we can see that state intervention is absolutely essential in getting great ideas and producing innovation, and there is no substitute for it, because the market by nature will only bet on winners and established technologies. It is not good at producing these sort of changes. And that is certainly true of the issues we're dealing with tonight. Just on the question, I don't want to have a long arcane discussion about politics and power. I mean, politics can be variously expressed at the ballot box on the street or in the workplace. People who know my history know that I'm not averse to getting on the street. That must be said, we managed to put 500,000 people on the streets in 2002 on the Iraq War, and it didn't change John Howard's mind. So there were challenges everywhere. I think on Saturday, if Clive got elected, the ballot box would actually be very useful, because we know in the negotiations between the Labor and Liberal Party, politics is about fear, and Labor fears the Greens more than it does the Conservatives. And the only way that is going to change is when they fear losing seats to the Greens more than they fear fending the coal lobby.